Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vungani in Washington, D.C. Now, one of the highlights of this year's annual African Union Summit was the unveiling of the African passport. This has been long a dream of Africa's founding fathers like Kwame Nkrumah and other independence leaders. Now, the African passport would work to facilitate free and easy travel by Africans seeking to visit other African countries for either business or pleasure. The African Union says that one of the main benefits of the African passports would be the boosting of economies due to the increase in trade between African countries. And this would ultimately lead to the creation of more jobs, a positive step in solving Africa's high unemployment rates. Now, recent statistics show that trade amongst African nations is only 13%, and that is very low when you compare it to, say, trade between European or Asian countries. Now, we tend to do business more with countries outside of the African continent than with each other. But despite the willingness and optimism shared by many African countries like Rwanda and Ghana, which already provide visa-free access to Africans, many are skeptical about the continent's ability to implement the African passport. And part of it has to do with the fact that many African governments don't have the adequate technical skills, nor do they have the infrastructure to run a uniform immigration regime. Others say that some countries will be hesitant to embrace the idea of the African passport, because it would mean that they would lose some of the revenue from the visas, the visa fees that people pay when they enter these countries. Now, whether that revenue source is more important than the other benefits like increased trade is debatable. Overall, there's much more to gain when African countries open their borders to other Africans. What is your take on this? This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's listen to your opinions on our topic today.
The African passport seems to be a worthy ideal to strive for. I'm just a little concerned about implementation. Whenever it's come to anything involving the African Union, it's been a little short on implementation. And I'm also curious about how wealthy countries are going to deal with it. Will South Africa, which is known for being very xenophobic, accept people being able to just travel and go to their country? Will they be worried about an influx of new people?
I'm Gibson Dopo. My opinion on the issuance of the One African Passport is it is a brilliant idea. I think it shows us as one people, one continent, we should wisely use this passport. But my fear comes about when such a one passport system in Africa has been introduced and has been abused by some other citizen, that in itself will stigmatize the entire passport, and people might be afraid to use one African passport. People might start to revert to using the original country passport. But I think it is a brilliant idea, as I said earlier. But I think I prefer us going towards one currency before going towards one passport.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vungani, and today we're talking about the idea of the African passport. The African Union recently launched a Pan-African passport, and the passport would allow for the free movement of people around the continent. And the AU says that this would help in stimulating inter-Africa trade and essentially be a catalyst for job creation. But are all African countries on board with this idea?
In the studio with me, I have the ministers of youth and employment for two countries. Minister Jame from the Gambia, Minister Babe from Mali. And representing Senegal is Mr. Moussa Tchor. Mr. Tchor, what do you think about the idea of the African passport in terms of promoting trade and investment on the continent? Let me start off with Minister Jame.
Well, thank you. If you recall way back in the 1960s, precisely in 1963, when the OAU was founded, it was founded on the fundamental principles of African Union.
Right, African unity.
From that period to now, we've looked at various ways of how to do that. And I agree entirely with that vision that Africa could become one, and it can only be a power in the world when, you know, it becomes as one entity.
Right.
And as I said, from 63 to now, you know, we've attempted in many ways to, you know, realize that objective. The recent one is the introduction of the passport. This will, you know, facilitate movement of people and goods, you know, across borders.
Right.
If you get a passport and it is AU, you can literally go across borders freely and easily. So to me, it will go a long way in achieving that noble vision of bringing African people closer,
right,
and the countries closer, in that way we can harness the huge potential that is in Africa.
Now, Minister Babe, at the end of the day, how realistic is this vision of having an African passport? And what do you see as some of the challenges of in realizing this dream?
You know, for us Malians, everybody knows you travel a lot. And already in our part of the continent, we've developed, in ECOWAS, we've developed the ECOWAS passport that Mali was amongst the first countries to use.
Right.
So for us, this is like a bigger picture of what we have in ECOWAS, which is considered as a successful integration of countries in Africa. For us, this passport is a dream coming true because it will not only allow people to know each other, to visit each other, but it will also allow trade amongst African countries to develop. And if you see what we do with the rest of the world, we have more commercial relationships with colonial powers than amongst ourselves.
Absolutely.
It's easier to go to Europe now than to go from Mali, say, to Liberia for me.
Correct.
And with such a passport, I think it's really good for people, it's good for the goods, it's good for trade, it's good for everything.
Yeah.
And the challenge might be that some countries might still be reluctant to use it.
Right.
Because if you have a single passport which will allow you to go from one country to the other without paying like visa fees and stuff, some country might use it as an excuse to say they're going to lose you know,
revenue.
Exactly.
Right.
But for me, it's something fantastic.
Mr. Cho, do you think that the fear for the loss of revenue from visa fees, because honestly, I don't think there's that much money that comes from visa fees. Do you feel that that's one of the main reasons that African countries might not buy, some African countries might not buy into the idea of the African passport?
Well, comparing the visa fees to what people can lose by not, by not having this African passport, it is really something that we lose.
Mm.
We lose much more things by not applying this passport than by applying it.
Mm.
And we Senegalese, we at least at ease when we are dealing with this topic, because with the Gambian people, we have experienced the Confederation of Senegambia. With the Malian, also before the independence, we have just one country between Senegal and Mali. Just to say that these ideas of frontiers are just created by the colonialists.
Right.
But these are things that we didn't know. This African passport can make the circulation of people and goods very easy in the continent.
Mm.
And this will allow also the continent to have just one voice by speaking and talking to the partners, be it economic partners or people from other countries. And we have also the experience that we have in other continents, such as the European continent. People have now the experience has shown now that only the unity of countries can make them
stronger,
powerful,
right,
and stronger,
right,
and speaking on one voice can also enable them to defend their interest better than just facing the partners alone, everyone taking his own side. We think that it is something very positive for our continent.
Now, finally, Mr. Minister Jame, some countries on the continent will say we are doing so well economically and we feel like by opening borders to other countries that are not doing so well, we'll have an influx of people who are coming in to look for jobs and other opportunities. Obviously, you know, we have people who in this room that are responsible for employment in your countries. What would you say to allay the fears of some of these countries? And I won't name some names, but obviously you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't think there are any justifiable fears in that regard, because the African, by him or herself, is known to be known for sharing whatever he or she has. And so if you happen to be in a country that is very wealthy and I happen to be in a country that is not, you know, well to do, and with the introduction of this passport, then you think that I could be tempted to come to your country. You should, you know, welcome that.
Mm.
You know, this is what we are known for.
You should welcome them because we are known as a community
that shares, that is caring, and, you know, all of those things. Right. So it's not something that should hold us back in moving forward this agenda of integration.
The question on which I wanted to come back is when you're talking about the fact of opening the frontiers to other people.
Right.
Just to talk that, to say that we are in a world of competition and of globalization. Immigration has never been a factor under the development of some local communities. Even in these lands where we are, in America, we can remember that this is a land which was, populated by people from other countries.
Built
by immigrants.
Right.
We remember the story of the Mayflower Compact and something like this.
Absolutely.
And just to say that we have to prepare people to be very competitive. And this goes through what Minister Jame has said a while ago, meaning by training the young people so that even if other people come, they should be viewed as people who come just to contribute in the building of our nation.
Right. Not to be seen as predators.
Yeah,
who are coming
not
to
as
take.
Predators.
Right.
Yeah, this cannot be, they cannot be seen through a very negative view.
Right.
Because as many countries, those developed countries have been built by people most of the time coming from other places.
Right.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Those were ministers from Mali, Minister Babe and Minister Jame from the Gambia. Their portfolios include youth unemployment in their respective countries. They were joined by Mr. Choro from Senegal. Now, my next guest is Mohamed Omar, a journalist and a Knight Fellow based in Tanzania. Mohamed says that it is quite absurd, if not ironical, that Europeans and North Americans have an easier time traveling to and within the continent of Africa than Africans themselves.
What do you think about this initiative, the African Union initiative to unveil a passport?
So I think it's a very important first step towards the realization of what the EU says is a dream of visa-free travel for African citizens across the continent. It's an important move in the right direction that will help us Africans connect with each other. But I think it's also important to underscore the fact that part of the challenge that Africans have in traveling to each other's countries is extraordinarily expensive.
Why is it so expensive for Africans to travel within Africa?
So it's just because like the infrastructure is a challenge. That's one. But also, for example, flying across African capital cities is also a huge problem. So, for example, in Dar es Salaam, there are no direct flights to West Africa. So you have to go through either Nairobi or Addis to get to capital cities in West Africa. So these are huge obstacles for Africans to travel across the continent. So while highly commendable, it shows that African leaders have seen this to be a challenge and they're doing something about it. But the symbolism now needs to be followed through with some substantive reforms and work, to make sure that we are better connected to each other.
So it wasn't really that Africans are not able to access other countries because of visa restrictions and all that. It's just that it's very expensive to move from point A to point B logistically on the continent.
Absolutely. I mean, the visa restrictions are an issue. But for example, like I don't need a visa to go to Kenya as a Tanzanian. I don't need a visa to go to South Africa. So there are already Ghana, for example, announced earlier this year that, it's going to forego visa requirements for other Africans. So these things are already in place. And as I said, while it is that symbolically, it's very important that we have the AU launching this African passport, but the real issues that will make the connection between the connection for Africans on the continent much much deeper is some of the infrastructural challenges that Africans have to confront when they have to think about traveling to each other's countries. So here's another interesting statistic. Now, this is just on trade, right? So apparently, from that World Bank report that I alluded to earlier, intra-African trade costs around 50% higher. So the cost for intra-African trade are around 50% higher than in East Asia. And apparently, the report goes on to say that this is the highest of intra-regional costs in any developing region, you know. So again, you know, like Africans, we want to visit each other's countries, you know, but we also want to trade with each other. But so having, you know, that passport is one thing, you know, but then in order for us to then gain the benefits of that visa-free passport, we need to have some of these things fixed in order to really enjoy the benefits of a more connected Africa.
Now, is it possible that Africans, I mean, people on the continent in Africa are more likely to want to travel outside of the continent than they are to travel within the continent to visit other African countries?
I don't think that's necessarily true, Jackson. I think that Africans want to know one another and want to experience what it's like, you know, to live in other parts of the continent. I think the challenge, as I mentioned, is just expensive. I'm traveling to Nairobi, an hour-long flight. That's going to cost me $400.
Our flight in the U.S. here would be about $100.
Or I lived in the U.K. A while back. EasyJet flights from London to Paris or whatever, like, you know, cost sometimes, you know, if you're lucky, like less than £50, you know. So you can see that if it's cheap, people would want to travel across, you know, different countries on the continent. Like I haven't been to West Africa. I want to see you visit Nigeria. Like everyone talks about Lagos. Like I want to experience Lagos. Like similarly, you know, I've had conversations with friends, Nigerian friends. They say the same thing, but it's just very, very challenging, you know, and expensive to move around in the region.
So now, when you travel yourself, sorry to cut you off, but when you travel, what do you usually travel for when you're traveling around the continent? Are you traveling for work?
Usually for work. But I would like to travel, you know, just for pleasure. Like I'm a huge music fan, so I'd like to visit, you know, Senegal, for example, which is famous for its live music scene, right?
Right.
You know, like I want to know what it's like to watch a live soca night, you know, in Nigeria, you know, and in Egypt, you know, visit the one of the most famous derbies, you know, between Zamalek and Al Ahly, you know, all these kind of things, like should be very easy for us Africans to experience.
Omar, are you the exception though? I mean, how many young people in your generation are actually curious about traveling within the continent to go and consume?
I think a lot of us are. I think a lot of us are curious, and so I'm mentioning like flying, you know. Even driving across the continent is incredibly difficult. Like cheaper options like rail travel, you know, is complicated because we don't have like connected rail networks, you know, across the continent. So I don't want to come across as being as if I'm being negative, because as I said, like I think it's a great symbolic move. It's a realization of a long held Pan-African dream. That goes way back from our founding fathers, you know, across the continent. So it's finally happening. That's a great, great thing, and we should applaud it. But now we need the follow-through that will then start to make it even easier for us to travel across the continent. But I also, like, want to emphasize, as I say, like, the economic realities, you know, that could come and benefits that could come from a more connected, you know, continent. Here's another stat for you, Jackson. Apparently, at present, only 5% of Africa's imported cereal comes from other African countries.
Only
5%. Isn't that extraordinary?
Yes.
Only 5%. This is also from that World Bank report. And I think that's, like, all these numbers, you know, are just really, really flabbergasting. Mm. And I think we could do better. And the passport is one move in that direction. We need to follow through on the other policies as well.
Omar Mohammed, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we would therefore suggest for your consideration as we launch the African Passport 2 that we agree to create conditions in the member states to issue the passport to their citizens within their national policies as and when they are ready.
They can decide to give it to, you know, good business people that they think that, you know, can, you know, invest all across the continent and so forth. But the ultimate goal, as I said, is really to make sure that, you know, everybody move living.
I mean, it'll be very useful for me, for instance, whereas we're trying to scale across the continent. It may expedite visa processes. It could be a way of having that primary information already on that person. So when, you know, they show their African Union passport, you know, it expedites the process of getting the visas because they're already in the system.
I hope that the AU passport turns into something like an EU passport, so that if I decide that I want to, you know, set up a business and look at a certain region to optimize my business operations, I can set up without any complications.
Welcome back. Like we touched upon briefly earlier in the show, there are already some existing sub-regional agreements that allow for the freedom of movement of people, for example, the East African Community or the ECOWAS region. However, just as some countries are continuing to open their doors for easy entry by fellow Africans, there are those that continue to adopt immigration policies that make them, quote, less free. Bangi Ofon is a young professional with roots from East Africa. She has lived in the Horn of Africa and in North America. Oh. Do you feel your generation is much more exposed in terms of understanding and appreciating mm-hmm. other cultures, mm-hmm. other African cultures? Mm-hmm. Do you feel mm-hmm. that the younger generation, youth yeah. today, are much more exposed and much more appreciative of...
I think we're much more open today compared to my mom's generation. We have experienced more of other people's cultures. Mm. And that's what makes us more open.
What do you think is it? What is it that has opened up the world?
Globalization, number one, I think.
But In the internet,
right. Technology has changed, you know, so much. I can like WhatsApp with my friend in China, you know, so it's made it easier.
Now, I have to explain to our listeners that Bunge is not your regular kid, aside from having lived all these different places, but there's a connection to the AU, right? Yeah. Your parent, mm-hmm. one of your parents mm-hmm. worked for the AU, and you probably understand some of appreciate the bureaucracies that make things impossible to implement.
You know, you also, as you said, you also have to look at it in a political way. You know, like, there's so many complications and so many... aspects whereby some countries do not, you know, necessarily agree, and so it makes it more complicated. Mm-hmm. So,
and different legal regimes.
You know what I mean? And it's, you know, yeah, it's mostly political.
My first reaction was mm-hmm. that, I mean, as much as this is a great idea, mm-hmm. and I really commend them for, I commend whoever came up with the idea, mm-hmm. I feel like it would be more feasible if they did it within the economic bloc. Now, you might have some inside information about how this, about the progression. Have you heard about it before it became public? Did you hear about it? Did you know about it in the works?
All I'm going to say is it's feasible. That's all
it is workable.
Yeah, it's about time. You know what I mean? It's about time as a bloc, as an African bloc, we all came together and make this passport thing work.
I like that's that. I like that. Mm-hmm. It's about time. When you travel mm-hmm. with your American passport?
Yeah, but I do have a Ugandan passport.
Which one is easier for you to travel with?
I mean, obviously.
The American passport.
The American right? passport.
Yeah. If you are traveling from Uganda to Kenya, which one is easier for you?
So, obviously, then I'll use my Ugandan passport.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's Uganda to Kenya.
Because it's Uganda to Kenya. Yeah. You probably don't have to pay for the visa.
There you go.
But on the other hand, mm-hmm. some people say that if they travel with the American passport, mm-hmm. they would rather pay the $30 or mm-hmm. whatever, how much mm-hmm. it is to for the visa, mm-hmm. but that they are treated a little differently.
That's totally true. And this is something that Africans, we have to stop doing. And, you know, like as soon as
treating
we see,
foreigners better than we
yes,
treat ourselves.
I mean, I'm Ugandan. I'm proud to be Ugandan. And when I go to my country, I want to be able to be relaxed. You know, I don't want to be hustled because I am Ugandan.
Right.
And it's true. When I am with my American passport, oh,
it's
like
different.
It's different.
You treat it differently.
Yeah. And
right.
I'm like, we need to
Why
stop
do you
doing
think that,
that
is?
Because we put Europeans and on a higher level, and
right.
I'm like, it's
on a higher pedestal.
On a higher pedestal,
yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
That's
stupid.
So sad.
It's sad.
It's so sad. Are there African passports that give you access to more countries than others?
That's actually a good question. Yes, they are. I'm sure you know some.
Like South Africa, maybe?
Absolutely.
So if you're South African, if you hold a South African passport, you're able to travel anywhere in Africa.
You know,
with you're treated almost on the same level as
there you go.
You know, the European
you
passports
go.
Or the
yeah.
American passport holders.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess your treatment is based on how strong or powerful your country is. The
absolutely.
Stature, right.
Like, who knows Uganda?
Uganda is a very powerful country.
It's a powerful country.
Uganda is a powerhouse.
On what level? Like, what do you say it's a powerhouse? Seriously. Yeah, we're very powerful.
You're
very,
very
powerful.
Country.
Do not underestimate Uganda.
If you have a South African passport, it's very easy for you to travel around the continent. I guess if you have an Egyptian passport, probably.
Probably,
too.
Yes.
But the other part of the conversation that I wanted us, we kind of, you know, sidestepped it. But there's some countries that they're less receptive to immigrants.
Okay.
South Africa being one of them.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the issue of xenophobia. How do you see that working out?
So you see, so I've been to South Africa a couple of times. I love South Africa. I think it's a very beautiful country. You know, putting in consideration what they went through and everything. But South Africa is like a society that's really been closed in. So they're not they haven't been exposed like Uganda's been exposed, you know. So, you know, in one way, I can't blame them. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, okay.
But you blame their closed-mindedness, I guess, to their government having closed them in for a long time.
Yeah, because, you know, they were fighting
it's
for their freedom.
20 years now
and
after
that, but
the
then
end of
I'm
apartheid.
Like, and I get that.
And also... their xenophobia is directed towards fellow
foreigners.
Africans.
Yeah, well,
when they say foreigners are really everybody African.
That's the irony, and like most of these countries helped them during the struggle.
Absolutely,
so
Uganda did.
Uganda
Your country
did.
Maybe having the African passport regime will be one of those ways to open South Africa.
There you go. There you go.
You know,
but I don't think we should also look at it, you know, from the negative. I think also it's like, okay, what can these people teach
bring us
right, you know,
right.
As Ugandans, as Kenyans, as Nigerians, you know what I mean? So
I guess bring money and ideas
and innovation.
But the question is, I mean, as much as other countries are poor, they're not in lack of ideas and innovation.
No, absolutely not, you know.
And I get the feeling that the much more economically prosperous nations close themselves off because you don't want to open to the riffraff, quote-unquote, and you know, of everybody
no,
else.
No, and I understand.
In,
I mean, it's the same thing in America. You know, you don't want to, like, you see Trump, he's trying to, like, build a wall, whatever.
Right,
it's the
right,
same thing. It's
right.
I think it's human nature at the end of the day. You know, it's fear.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. It was another great show. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye. Pretty boy in a no Chris Nike boot. She don't fall for no dope. She don't cry for no dupe. She shed those lonely tears for the little ghetto youth. They're calling starry. Ex-news and cleaner. Food might be dirty, but his heart is much cleaner than those politicians fighting down sex and mania. And